We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
PHLY Eagles podcast, Wednesday, high noon, high energy. Bo Wolf, Zach Berman, lots to talk about. Zach, you just made it in the nick of time, not in the bill of time, for the start of this show. You heard from Jalen Hurts and a few other Eagles. What's popping?
Well, good to see you.
Bill Belichick news with the Eagles coming out today. We talked to Howie Roseman yesterday. We're talking running backs. Loaded show.
Loaded show, yes. Yeah, so spoke to Jalen Hurts, spoke to Cam Jurgens, had to leave when Dallas Goedert was speaking to get here. Hope Dallas was not offended. Jalen Hurts, it was interesting. It was framed to him. You know, you said different years require different leadership.
Just checking Twitter. Sorry to interrupt you. Dallas Goedert just tweeted, F-U Z-Berm.
I apologize, Dallas. I promise you I will bother you enough this year that you will say probably F-U Z-Berm at another time. Jalen Hurts, when he was asked about how different years require different leadership styles, if you will.
Yes.
And what's going to be different this year? And he says,
Find out what this year is going to require? How do you get that temperature? We don't know the identity yet. I can't tell you the identity yet.
That's not what he said.
Well, I know, but that's just
Actually, what he said is he doesn't want to leave it up to anyone else to set the culture this year. And he communicated that. He needs to communicate that to the people above and elsewhere that, like, he's the one. You know, he's the one kind of instilling the culture in the building. So that was an interesting way of framing it.
So he has fired Nick Sirianni.
No. But that, like, you know, and he says, and it all starts with work, right? But I thought that was an interesting way that he framed it. I asked him about his reaction to Brian Johnson's dismissal or the coordinator
change. Important question.
And he said, yeah, it's been a minute. Since he spoke to us, and he said that Brian's been a huge part of his development. He thinks Brian can be a big time head coach in the league. Like, the Eagles needed a change, and they made a change. But he still thinks Brian. He said it wasn't going to happen here, but he thinks Brian's going to be a big time head coach in the league. He said as far as Kellen Moore, Doug Nussmeier recruited him to Florida. And whenever I hear this, and this, you heard this with Brian Johnson, so-and-so tried, he didn't do a good enough job. Jalen didn't go there, but no, he did say that he has
By the time he leaves the NFL, Jalen Hurts will be coached by every coach he turned down.
Every coach turned down. Yeah. He was asked about having more responsibility at the line of scrimmage.
Post Jason Kelsey world. Departure. Yeah.
He says that's something that he's kind of always wanted and always been interested in. Mm-hmm. And he said that, you know, Jason's pump faked them a few times, right? So, like, he's had time to kind of prepare for this year. And
he's really throwing everybody under the bus.
No, he wasn't.
He wanted Kelsey to retire a couple years ago. He wants Nick Sirianni fired as the head coach.
That's not at all what it was. But yeah, he was saying that he's kind of used to picking up new systems. It's like being back in college again, where there's this revolving door.
Yeah, but back to the merry-go-round. So much for the same play call.
Yeah, back to the merry-go-round. He's excited to say Saquon's on this side now. He's worked with him this offseason. So those are some of the highlights.
Anything on Devontae Smith?
What's that?
Did he say anything about Devontae Smith?
Not specifically.
Everybody wrote their Devontae Smith stories yesterday, so nobody asked him about it today.
It was pretty quick. It was more about some of the offseason changes. There was a lot about Saquon and then Kelce. Speaking about Kelce, Cam Jurgens, now in Kelce's locker. You know, Eagles have.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to know who's got the locker next to him.
Tyler Steen.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh. So for those who don't know, there's five lockers in the back right corner of the Eagles locker room. Would you just call it the back right or the back left? Because if you're facing it, it's right. If you're standing
there,
it's
back right.
Back right. Yeah. Okay.
You enter the room.
It's on your right.
You stare down the narrow hallway. Far back right.
Yeah. If you're sitting at your locker, it's kind of on the left
side.
Shares
a wall with the sort of player's lounge.
Sure. So there's five lockers there. And it's sequenced ever since the Doug Peterson era. Left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. So Cam Jurgens, who was in the right guard locker last year, he moved from his rookie year to Isaac Seumalo's locker.
Did somebody ask him that or did he reveal that?
He revealed that.
Okay.
Great revelation. Appreciate it, Cam. He got moved. And so Elliot, being the astute reporter he is, asked who's in the
very,
right.
Very good job. Yeah.
Asked who's in the locker next to him and says Tyler Steen. Yeah. So in any event, Cam Jurgens taking over at.
He should have said, I can't remember his name. Just like Nick.
Nick. And actually, there was kind of talk behind the scenes, like if not behind the scenes among the team, among the reporters, that if they brought in a starting right guard where they moved Steen's locker. And I'm like, no, they wouldn't. I didn't think they'd move Steen's locker. Someone else I was speaking to.
No, because it would be a rookie. Yeah, they're not going to.
Exactly.
But if they had signed somebody, then
Well, like sign someone after the fact. I don't think they'd move Steen after the fact.
Probably not.
Because as someone else pointed out, Isaac Seumalo's year when he started in that locker stall and then he got benched and they didn't move Wisniewski over. Right?
Nor did Dickerson have a spot there when he was a rookie.
Sure, exactly. So that was kind of, but I'm going to get a text after the show from the other reporter. We weren't like on the record, if you will, so I don't want to say who it was. But he's like, oh, no, he thinks they'd move Steen.
Oh, I don't think they would.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. So that was some of the stuff from Cam Jurgens. He said
it would have been so funny if he revealed that it was one of like the futures guys who was there.
Yeah, exactly. Or to keep it, it says TBD. You have to earn this locker.
Yes.
Yeah. I asked Cam, like, you had 2 years to prep for this, but
Said Troy Fautanu.
Or just said, how do you deal with the pressure, the burden, taking over for Jason Kelce? This is like Bill Guthridge taking over for Dean Smith, right?
Did you say that?
No, I didn't say the Bill Guthridge part. Be a little before his time. Because there's always that thing when college coach leaves.
You don't want to be the guy.
You want to be the guy who replaces the guy. Exactly. And he's like, you know, he gave the answer you would expect him to give, that he can't look at it that way. He just has to be himself. That be too much on him if he thinks of like having to replace Jason Kelce. But, you know, Tony in the equipment staff or in the locker room did a good job, cleaning everything out. So they haven't really seen the locker room that clean in a while, but now that's Cam Jurgens.
Wow. Taking more shots at Kelce.
Well, no, they didn't say that. I'm saying
you're saying that.
But Tony did a good job cleaning it out. He said he doesn't know how they got that all out of there. There's a lot of stuff, right? Mm. But there's probably more room to navigate now in that locker room.
So the thing is just teeming, overflowing with jerky.
Yeah, that'd be if he just put boxes of beef jerky in there.
Yeah.
The jerky. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Anything else from the NovaCare complex?
From today? No. Yesterday we had Howie and Nick. We can get to that. And we had Devontae. Shout out to Devontae getting that contract. But
shout out to Devontae.
But I know you're eager to get these Bill Belichick.
No, let's stick on the press conferences and then we'll talk about Belichick after. Let's talk about yesterday's pre-draft press conference with Howie Roseman. Although let me ask you this. Do you think the Eagles knew that this Bill Belichick story was going to drop today when they scheduled the Howie Roseman press conference for yesterday?
I don't know. And it would be a leap for me to suggest that those two events are related. I would have loved to have the chance to
my supposition, just guessing, is an unequivocal yes.
I mean, it'd be kind of awkward to have Nick and Howie up there together. And then the questions are all about you know, or yeah. you guys talked about.
I mean,
about
that's what the
Belichick.
Questions would have been about.
Exactly. So, I mean, certainly, but I don't know enough to say these two events were related. I do know enough to say great job, as always, by Seth Wickersham.
We'll get to that. We're going to have that full conversation. Yes. Let's talk about what Howie Roseman did say yesterday.
Yeah. What were your big takeaways? You were there.
Well, I thought the most interesting moment, certainly, was the defensiveness from Howie Roseman about the Hassan Reddick trade. You know, he was asked about the trade. Like, he initially said it's a win-win. This is, you know, Hassan Reddick's a great player, all this stuff. And then the follow-up from Dave Uram was like, well, if he's such a great player, you know, are you getting fair value with a conditional pick? And immediately, Howie, like, very hair trigger. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a conditional pick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you understand the semantic difference here. He's saying it's a third that could turn into a second, and it's 2 years out. Like, it's a very fair question. Is that enough value? And he, again, is, like, sort of pissily pushing back on the idea that, like, this isn't that this could even be questioned as enough value because it's not the full picture. It's not just the player, but it's him leaving and the money that you can use. But he could have said that, like, I think that he is absolutely sensitive to the perception that he didn't do well in this trade, but it's hard not to believe that perception is reality. I mean, thing was such an eventuality that of course they didn't get all they could get.
Right. So this is Howie going back to law school, if you will. Howie's never been an accountant. He's been a lawyer. I want to make that clear. No, he's professionally trained as a lawyer, and I'm not professionally trained as a lawyer. But my understanding is one thing you learn is that pick apart the semantics of the question when you don't want to address the question, right? If you disagree with the premise of the question, it keeps you from answering the actual question.
Just when you think you've got all the answers, I change the question.
No, so you disagree with the premise. So he picks apart the semantics. And yeah, so he disagrees with the premise that, like, a move in a vacuum is supposed to make you better. He should have answered it better, and he was wrong to jump on Dave Uram, I think, for, like, the structure of the question, because he understood the spirit of the question. I was listening to Daryl Morey this morning on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm saying the name. I can't say I didn't say the name here. And actually, Daryl says that he wishes he could communicate, like, the whole truth to fans sometimes, but...
But unfortunately, he doesn't have a microphone with which to do so.
No. His point was, like, if you say something that, like, you think is going to happen, but then it doesn't happen, then you're caught up in well, you said this was going to happen. I think the way Howie could have answered that question, and it would have been a fair response, and it would have been informative for the audience, is that they didn't view it like trading Hassan Reddick makes the team better. They viewed it, and you can disagree with this if you feel free to disagree if you think this will happen, that they traded Hassan Reddick for Bryce Huff, a draft pick 2 years down the line, and cash that they can allocate elsewhere. That basically Hassan Reddick wanted to come back at he wanted a certain number. The Eagles weren't willing to pay that number, so they kind of looked at it from the global perspective of, all right, how do you take one asset and get something else for it and then replace it with this. The idea that they didn't get enough in the trade, I mean, we've discussed that.
I mean, enough is subjective. They got the most that they could get.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem like adequate value for the level of player that he is. The thing that I not even push back, but just slightly disagree with, if I'm going to be a Howie and argue the semantics with the way that you just framed it, is not that I don't think this was the case of the galaxy brain idea, like, well, you know, we could trade Hassan Reddick and replace him with Bryce Huff and use this money to extend Devontae, all these different things. I think it was very clearly Hassan Reddick wasn't coming back.
Yes.
And so then they had to figure out what the best way to move forward was given that eventuality.
Yes, exactly. And you put it well there, that was the way they viewed it. Like, all right, how do you replace Hassan Reddick with the expectation that Hassan Reddick's not returning on your team? And how do you get some type of value and reallocate that cash in a different way?
So why do you think that he was so sensitive about that in particular?
Oh, because the I think he does not like to look at it like, how does this trade make your team better? Because it, clearly, when you trade an all-pro edge rusher for a 2026 pick, it's not making your team better. So that's why he said we can have a longer conversation about like the, you know, about building a roster, and you can't just look at the move in a vacuum. But he didn't want to have that conversation up there. I think that's his. If I had to guess, how he takes umbrage with the idea that every move is viewed isolated and not within the overall context of the offseason. So Howie,
I think part of the reason is he knows that this has been characterized as a thing of he didn't do a good enough job.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I will say this. I think Howie could have done a better job explaining that move in a way that doesn't like reveal so much that it's, you know, it's proprietary, but reveals enough that you can explain the team's thinking and it would seem logical to logical people. I think they're going to miss Hassan Reddick. I've said that. Sure. I think Hassan Reddick's an outstanding player. I understand, like, you get to a point where a player wants X. Your value on him is Y.
Player wants sex?
X. I definitely did not say sex. I definitely did not
That's
say sex.
That's a drop.
Okay. Your player wants X. I guess because I made the plural with wants. It's like when we... Okay. Player wants X. Okay. Yes. Okay. A player...
I mean, they would not have a very good roster if they weren't willing to have players who want sex.
I mean... I'll let you...
I just don't think they could compete.
No. Nor the rest of the NFL, for that matter. So, in any event... That did come up. It was Howie's first time addressing reporters since the trade. I thought it was interesting his framing for all the questions about drafting an offensive tackle, a player who would not have a clear start, a clear path to a starting job. And he did not back away from this idea. He said the things that we've outlined on this show, player could get hurt. Right, they don't view it like a redshirt year, that having depth is important. This is a position that they value. That he referenced how in the Super Bowl year they had a backup left tackle and they had to step in. It's not like baseball where you have a guy in Triple A or Double A, right? He's still on the roster. They really clung to this idea that if you're going to learn, what better way to learn than behind Lane Johnson or Jason Kelce?
Nick loved this.
Yeah. I don't feel as strongly about that part of it. It's more you're making a draft for the long term.
It's a good framing for coaches.
Exactly.
Because you asked this question sort of like the way that they have to think about things day to day is much different for a general manager and a head coach. And so, yeah, for a coach, like that idea is great. Like, oh, I can watch this guy and learn. But yeah, I mean, it's football. Guys get hurt all the time.
Sure.
And like that is something that is absolutely going to happen, and the position matters. And so, yes, I don't know. Like, you know, this is the week before the draft press conference, so you cannot take anything they say about the draft seriously in any way. But if it is that they draft a guy like Amarius Mims or Tyler Guyton, who is just a tackle and cannot play guard, yeah, like that matters. Like a starting caliber backup tackle is more valuable to you than a replacement level guard, or you know, whatever it is. Like, that's just the truth.
Yeah, and the reason I asked Nick that question, because it's obvious how he thinks this way. His draft history suggests it. His comments in the past have suggested it. They draft succession plans. They think long term. It's also obvious
at the important positions.
It's also obvious that Nick Sirianni is coaching for his job this year, right? I mean, Jeffrey Lurie didn't back off that idea publicly when he basically said coaches know they have to perform in this league. You have a story that we'll talk about in ESPN where Bill Belichick is literally talking about, or people around Bill Belichick are saying he has his eyes on the Eagles and the Cowboys and the Giants, right? Teams where the belief is the head coach has to win. So I frame it that way, and is that Nick Sirianni's in a position where he needs to maximize this season. And if you're talking about maximizing the season at the 22nd pick in the draft, the best pick for Nick Sirianni might not be someone who's going to be your 2026 starter, right? But that's the way Howie Roseman has to think. Howie Roseman is employed to think about 2026. Nick Sirianni is employed to think about week one.
That's exactly right. Anything else from Howie and or Nick?
Yeah, the cornerback thing came up. When I say the cornerback thing, the Eagles draft history.
This
felt cornerback.
Like one where it was like Howie had a specific message he wanted to disseminate and took the opportunity to do so.
Well, Howie doesn't mind letting you know that Rasul Douglas played well after he left Eagles coaching staff, right?
Right.
That they drafted a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, look, our evaluation was spot on. This guy's going to be a 7-8 year player.
I mean, that's true. But to be fair, Howie also did cut him.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. But in any event, yeah, Howie said that they value cornerbacks, which we know that they have had to find different ways to acquire high-level cornerbacks, trades, free agent signings, going back to even his time running the personnel department, as he mentioned. But he's not oblivious to their history drafting cornerbacks, and it's something that they try to learn from their mistakes. But yeah, he wanted to make it clear.
The way to phrase that question to get to the heart of the matter is we know you value corners because you've spent a lot of money on it. Has that been your course of action because you think that's a more reliable way to do it? And it's a difficult position to, you know, judge in the draft, or is that just how things have fallen?
And I would imagine that's the way things have fallen. Right. As you've documented, like last year's pick could have been Christian Gonzalez.
Sure.
2 years ago, they would have loved to trade up for Sauce Gardner or trade up for Derek Stingley. 3 years ago, I mean, Devontae Smith is an elite wide receiver. He was not their top choice at that spot.
Right.
It would have, you know, Patrick Surtain, J.C. Horn, right? So that's a way of saying.
And it's the same thing that Howie said when explaining the Darius Slay trade, that when you take a guy high and you miss, like on Sidney Jones, this is what you have to do
to pay
the cost of that miss.
Exactly. So, yeah, they like cornerbacks. The idea I think there's more validity to the storyline that the Eagles haven't taken a linebacker in the first round since 1979 to the storyline that Howie Roseman hasn't drafted a cornerback in the first round. Because I think
no doubt
there's been times he's interested in doing that. It's just kind of the way the board has fallen. Otherwise,
I thought you got a good answer on Jeremiah Trotter Jr.
Yeah, he said that. I mean, Howie knows how to pander when he has to. He's emotional when, or like, he feels he's biased. He feels this connection to these players from Philly and these people who've been in the building, who have legacies with the team, and that's why he kind of has to remove that emotion from the decision. He says it's always good to have someone from Philly who understands what it takes to play here, who understands what it means to the city, but that you have to make the evaluation independent of that. This is me talking now, not Howie. I think the Jeremiah Trotter evaluation is really complicated for the Eagles outside of the player for the reason we spoke about with Deniz on Friday, that, man, that is a burden. Like, to have he would always be compared to his father. And even, like, that can be really tough to deal with in this market.
Why is he falling? You know, Dane Brugler had a 7 round mock today. I had him as a 5th round. I see him, you know, going 4th, 5th round. I thought early in the draft cycle, we were talking about a 2nd, 3rd round pick.
Yeah, so this is one of those examples where when you watch the player, like, you like the player. After the year, when you start to look at the testing, the measurables, things of that nature, he's not particularly big. He's not particularly fast, right? And that's a position where people tend to want big and fast. It's actually, now, N'Kobe Dean, you might have said he fell for injury stuff, but it might be because he's not particularly big and he's not particularly fast, right? And so at the end of the year, when you just looked at the tape, he was considered a higher pick than what teams evaluated on draft day. I think that's probably the situation with Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I would also add Jeremiah Trotter fell to the 3rd round of the draft. I know for a fact that there were people in that draft room who were pounding the table. That judge the player here. Don't worry about there was a medical grade there, that there were people in that room who were worried about the medical grade. And there was one person in that room in particular who was like,
so they, as they tell the story, at least,
Yeah, yes. Although the person who is like, it's not a big name. It's not a big name coach. It's someone who's like long gone, hasn't even been involved with the team in 25 years. There's no reason for someone to make
you just say it.
I don't want to get the. I hope I'm not conflating a few stories, okay. but my belief is that Willie Shaw was the one who like really felt strongly in Jeremiah Trotter Jr. But
I find the way you pound the table kind of interesting.
With my, like, what would you pound with your hand?
Just so the way that you do it is just kind of funny to me.
Pound with my fist instead of my hand.
So no, here's my issue. I think the fist is the right way to pound.
Okay, well, because so it's the same thing. Like when I have to take my wedding band off when I am playing baseball or playing basketball.
Because it's on your left. Because you're lefty.
I'm lefty, exactly. So when I pound the table, do you pound it with your right?
No, I would. I don't really. I'm an ambidextrous pounder.
Okay, yeah. So I'm left-handed. And so if I pound it with my hand, like I just hit my ring, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't think so you have to slap. You slap.
Okay.
I think you do the fist.
Joy, if you hit a table, would you pound or would you slap?
I think it.
Pound. Okay.
I think it's the fist.
It's the fist. Okay. So then what's weird about how I do
don't know.
This?
It's like the angle, like the action that you like your, I don't know. It just, so, just the way your body moves. I don't know.
Man, did not see it going that direction today. All right, but yeah, that's so. Those were some of the things that came out.
Zach, I'm curious. Did you know that nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about?
I know one person does for sure.
Because before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had like 10 subscriptions, way more than that. Not good for me. And Rocket Money has helped me pare that down and save some cash money. Between streaming services, fitness apps, and delivery services, it's never ending. Thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate to lower your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. The rest, they'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So, stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/PHLY. That's rocketmoney.com/PHLY. rocketmoney.com/PHLY.
Talking about growing your savings, let me tell you about Trumark Financial Credit Union. Because when you join a credit union like Trumark Financial, you become a part owner, which means profits come back to you instead of going to shareholders. There's better rates, lower fees, and a better return on savings with more flexible options, all with the same digital tools and tech to make your life easier. Trumark has local roots headquartered in Fort Washington, where Joey went to school, with 24 branches in the Philly area. They serve our community and all our people right here at home. Becoming a member of a credit union has so many benefits over becoming a customer at a bank. It's a total no-brainer. Head over to Trumark.com/PHLY to learn more or find a branch near you. That's Trumark.com/PHLY, federally insured by the NCUA.
All right. Let's talk about the Seth Wickersham article. Yeah. That
always in the
today.
Mood to talk about Seth Wickersham.
And listen, there are there's rumors. There's innuendo on social media. There's reporting. And then there is the level of Seth Wickersham reporting. Yeah. And it is within the league. You are not going to get a more accurate accounting of things.
Yes.
And you also have to know how to read between the lines. So I'm going to read the paragraphs here in this story about why Bill Belichick does not have a job right now that are related to the Eagles. Not since Paul Brown in the 1960s had such a revolutionary head coach been available. Owners and executives, even on teams that didn't have openings, discussed hiring Belichick. Among them were the Eagles, who were coming off a disappointing finish 1 year after a narrow Super Bowl loss. Owner Jeffrey Lurie and general manager Howie Roseman, both Belichick fans, still strongly believed in their current head coach, Nick Sirianni, who over a stretch went 26-5. But Lurie thought it was worth asking a confidant of his about Belichick. A source close to Belichick said the coach would have been interested. Roseman told ESPN he had a conversation with Belichick, a check-in to see how the coach was doing after he was out in New England. A source close to Belichick confirmed there was no talk during the call about working for the Eagles. Still, there was chatter in league circles that Philadelphia and Belichick could be a match. Despite some owners and executives believing the game had passed Belichick by, the Eagles felt he still had his fastball. He had nearly beaten them in the 2023 season opener with an inferior team. There's also a belief that Belichick will coach only until he gets to 15 more wins, enough to pass Don Shula as the winningest coach in NFL history. Though not seriously considering a move, Lurie wondered to a confidant, was it worth overhauling the building, changing personnel and philosophies on everything from training staff to salary cap structure for someone who might coach only 2 years? You'll have to start over again, said a source with firsthand knowledge of the Eagles' thinking. Who would replace him? He hasn't had a good record of developing coaches. They were afraid that he'll have changed everything and every person, and then he'll be starting from scratch again. He didn't demand those changes, but they felt like if we hire him, we have to give everything to him and trust how he does it. So, Zach, at the time,
yeah,
we talked about this as a possibility.
Yes, you were all over it.
I feel like we framed it basically how it played out. What do you make of the tea from Seth Wickersham?
Oh, I mean, awesome reporting. The level of detail shows you this was not just a thought in their head. Like this was high level discussion. I think the fact that Howie Roseman specifically reached out to him is suggestive that if you had this narrative that Jeffrey that Bill wouldn't want to work with Howie, that's not true. Like there is a relationship there. If the thought that like this was a no-brainer that Nick Sirianni was coming back is obviously not true. Like there was clearly discussion here about not just Bill Belichick's fit, not just Bill Belichick, his ability as a coach, but what it would look like after he was here, right? To have that.
You would not go through that thought exercise if you were not at least considering.
Exactly. Yes. And so
if you were firmly committed to Nick Sirianni, and how could you have been at that time?
Well, this is the conversation that we had then was if there's an 8-time Super Bowl winning coach on the market, like, and you're not, and you know, you're in a position where you're unsure what to do with your coach. If you're not having that conversation, you're probably not being totally responsible. Now there's a difference between just like thinking about it and then having the level of conversation that Seth and Don and Jeremy outlined in that story. So yeah, I mean that's pretty eye opening, and it's pretty revealing. But I think that it clearly shows you that Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman hold him in high regard. I know there was a report out there around that time that like Lurie would never want to work with Belichick. That's clearly not the case. Like if they were intrigued enough here. There was reporting or suppositions, like I said, that Belichick wouldn't want to work with Howie. I don't think that's the case either. I think there's respect between the two of them. So, I do think that's something that could have happened. And the fact that the Eagles are mentioned as a team for next year shows that this is something that's going to be looming. Fair or unfair to Nick Sirianni, that's the business here. Bill Belichick is on the market. He's, you know, someone close to him is saying the Eagles, the Giants, and the Cowboys. It is going to be a lingering storyline this year. The audience might not like it. Some people might not like if Bill Belichick's out there and it's made known that he's interested in the Eagles, then this is going to be a storyline that follows the Eagles this season.
I have a slight disagreement about the way that you framed it as Lurie and Howie. I do think that this flirtation, as it is characterized, was from Jeffrey and not from Howie. And
interesting. Okay.
When you're talking about all the things that would have to change, part of that is the way that the personnel department is run. I don't think that Howie Roseman would want to change that much, and I think Bill Belichick would.
You think so?
I do.
Based on what you've heard, I'm not saying that he would want Howie Roseman out. Yeah.
But I think that he would want structural changes to the way that they go about their business. And like we talk about the like the information and the media game among general managers and owners and like the information power brokers, right? And Howie Roseman is as good at this, if not the best in the league, right? He has been doing it as long as anybody. He knows what he's doing. It's interesting, as you noted, that he told ESPN he had this conversation with Belichick, meaning that he didn't mind that this was out there.
Yes.
And I think part of that reason is because this way it is projected as him and Lurie. But I think that the real flirtation here is, and like Lurie's talking to confidants about it. You know, he's not, we might not have the information that he and Howie were talking about it together. But I think if Jeffrey is seriously considering this, he knows that by bringing in Bill Belichick, you are bringing in somebody who is threatening Howie Roseman's power in the organization. And I think that Howie Roseman probably did not want that. And it's why Howie Roseman, as it was reported during the search, was like helping Nick Sirianni try to fill out the staff. I think Howie Roseman wanted Nick Sirianni to stay in part because Bill Belichick coming in is a threat to what he has built.
Yeah. I mean, I would say what you say seems plausible, but my understanding is that like Bill has actually, when I say my understanding, I'm not talking to Bill Belichick here. Like just what I've heard from talking to different
people. I do like the flirting with Bill because like, could you imagine a less sexy conversation than,
hey Bill, the media has been very unfair to me.
I'm curious your views of sexy conversations. We get to that
it's
during
not
summer.
Bill Belichick, although I know the Belichick Saban folder is what gets you going.
I'll say that I've spoken to people this offseason who said that like Belichick has actually, you know, he's developed a lot of respect for the way Howie's built the team.
Oh, I totally agree like, that there
like,
is that, a
that's someone like he would work with Howie.
Okay, I think that
that like he's not coming in and being like, yeah.
Oh, you know, I think there's a mutual admiration.
Okay,
but I also think like most things, it's not going to last. And who's going to have the ultimate power in that dynamic? It's going to be Belichick.
Well, yeah, and that was well documented in this story. Is that like if you hire Belichick,
right? I don't think that Belichick is wary of Howie. I think Howie would be wary of bringing in Bill.
Yeah, I mean, look, I also think Howie's legacy chase. I think Howie's legacy chasing too, and I think Howie wants that second Super Bowl. He knows what that means for him, and
sure,
If he thought that there was a coach who would help him win that second Super Bowl.
That's a totally fair point.
I think Howie's hell-bent on that second Super Bowl. Like I think that's a big deal to, I mean, obviously everyone wants to win the Super Bowl, but you know what that means, a two-time Super Bowl winning
GM. Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
And you built two different rosters, like you've done it, you know, you kept hearing, what was it, the Super Bowl, the stat that came out, Howie Roseman's the first GM in like modern history to make the Super Bowl twice in 5 years with a different coach and a different quarterback. And it's like, that's right. a very specific thing. Yeah, I think so. But as was documented in that story, that it's almost naive to think that if you're hiring Bill Belichick, you're just getting like the great coach. You're also getting what comes with it. And when they talked about you're bringing in, you know, Josh McDaniel and Matt Patricia and Jack Easterby in there. And then how about Bill's quote to Arthur Blank when Arthur Blank asked him why his guys aren't successful elsewhere? And he said, they're good soldiers, not good generals. But yeah, as was said about Jeffrey Lurie's concern there, or the Eagles' concern, is that what happens afterwards? Yeah, I do think the Eagles are very much thinking like, what does this look like 3 years from now? What does this look like 5 years from now?
And it's, which is absolutely the right thing to be thinking. Yeah, I do not think that they should have hired Bill Belichick. Just for the record, I think they came to the right decision.
We have that dropping. If no, I mean, look, I think Nick's a good coach. And I think Nick I'm curious to see how Nick does this year.
I also think just very funny that part of the reason they think he still has his fastball is because he almost beat them in week one.
Yeah, that's
like, okay, go sign Byron Maxwell again because he played his best game against you.
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous. Yeah. That's a little ridiculous. Yeah.
All right. Let's put that to bed because we've got more to get to.
But we can definitely revisit that this summer. That's an interesting.
Okay. Some news on the sporting front. Jonte Porter, Zach, banished from the NBA for his betting on the games. And we have a super chat from Mr. Rudy Poo who says, with the Jonte Porter news, what are the chances that the NFL might now make an example of Isaiah Rodgers and a lifetime ban?
No,
not gonna happen. The degrees here are so different.
Exactly.
I mean, Jonte Porter gambled what, like reportedly like over $2 million or something like that. Like all that, like just constantly.
But he was betting on his team's games too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Isaiah Rodgers, it's like kind of a minor mess up. Also, there, like, I do think that Howie was asked yesterday about like, do you need resolution on Isaiah Rodgers from the league before the draft next week? And like, I'm sorry. Isaiah Rodgers is a great little lottery ticket that if he turns into something, that's nice. Yeah. He is not changing anything about what they're doing next week, good or bad.
Yeah, and I want to make this clear right now. The Eagles are not drafting next week like purely based on this year's roster and certainly not based on like depth spots on this year's roster, right? That's kind of how I think about that. I mean, I do think they're not diminishing the idea of like
they need a starting right guard, but instead they're going to take Kinsley Suamatea because they got Isaiah Rodgers in the hopper.
Yeah, so I really think it comes down to they're not going to ignore right guard and corner on next year's team, but they're drafting the best players. That's that, or the best guys, the guys they think are the best fits.
Well, we're going to talk running backs in a minute, but before we do that, it's time to talk about our friends at Olipop. Olipop is a new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar and 9 grams of fiber per can. Olipop is available and online in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including the most recent launch at all Wawa stores. Olipop's debut in Wawa couldn't be more of a match made in heaven. A delicious, healthy drink meets a convenience store, both adored by a cult following. The two flavors debuting in Wawa? Oh, you already know. It's the classics. It's the two most popular flavors. It's classic root beer and strawberry vanilla. Olipop has delicious nostalgic flavors like vintage cola, classic root beer, orange squeeze, classic grape, strawberry vanilla, the aforementioned cream soda, and cherry cola. Olipop conducted a study that showed that their OliSmart formulation boosts beneficial gut bacteria and generates metabolites, supporting digestive and overall health. Hey, you looking at me right now, let's work on your gut health, okay? You need to work on your gut health, and OliPop's going to make it happen for you. Use the code PHLY20 for 20% off their next OliPop order, yours. The discount only applies to one-time orders, not to subscription orders. Olipop is sold online, drinkolipop.com, or on Amazon, and it's available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Wawa, Target, Sprouts, Wegmans, ShopRite, and GoPuff. Drinkolipop.com. That's DrinkOlipop.com. Olipop.
A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, well, the anxiety before a big Sixers game, and another thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite when watching that game. It was the original light beer, and to this day, it's still the best one. So if you're getting together with your friends tomorrow to watch this, or I'm sorry, tonight to watch this game, Miller Lite has more of the taste you want and less of the stuff that you don't. You think about the moments in life that matter most, Miller Lite is in it. It's conversations and bonding with friends. It makes it so much better when you have an ice cold Miller Lite right there. You have great taste. It's less filling, has that clean finish with simple ingredients as well because it keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer, less filling and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. Times change, but you can always count on the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/PHLYBirds. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces.
How are you feeling about the game tonight, Zach?
I'm excited. I think the Sixers are going to win. I think I'm confident that they need to win. I know it's kind of like a game six when you're up 3-2, right? Because if they lose, they play tomorrow night, but you want to avoid Boston. And so I think they can beat the Knicks in round one. So the Sixers need to win. I think they match up well. I think there's certain things Miami can do to make it difficult for them, but Sixers got the best player in the court. They got the third best player in the court. I think they win.
All week, I thought they were going to win until last night when I saw on Twitter a tweet from Albert Breer that said, the Commanders kicked off their mass 30 visit tonight by taking the draft prospects, including Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, and J.J. McCarthy to Topgolf for a casual dinner/mixer. More than 20 potential draftees in town, and they'll all be at the facility tomorrow. And when I see that that's how Josh Harris is running that football team, I'm sorry. I don't believe that he deserves to win tonight, nor will he lead a team that's going to win tonight.
I got to tell you, I don't know Josh Harris personally, although I have been on TV with him before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. I was on a Philly Sports Talk, former Daily News Live in 2012, and he had just taken over the team. And before a game, I was on the set. It was Michael Barkan, I think it was Bob Cooney, and it was myself and Josh Harris.
Wow.
And yeah, I was talking hoop.
Please,
talking ball
Josh, tell me your secrets.
No, but anyway,
I want to be you.
I don't think Josh Harris is like involved in the organization of their top 30 visits. I think your feeling about him is stretching a little too far. If you think
Pitched this idea to him and he thought it was the most brilliant thing he's ever heard.
I actually think what Josh Harris does is he hires people, pays them a lot of money to run his teams and trust them to run his teams.
There is absolutely no chance that Josh Harris doesn't know that that is their plan for the top 30 visits. It definitely came up in the interview process. It's definitely a thing that Peters had on his mind. It's absolutely something he is aware of.
This is
his new toy.
Yeah, I don't think he's involved in the top 30 visits. But look.
You don't think he knows that that's their strategy?
But I don't think he's like pitching them ideas.
I'm not saying it's his idea. Yeah, I'm saying putting up with that idea.
I don't think
he's
approving it either. I just think he's just like, okay, I hired you, do what you do. That's kind of how he.
I don't know. A real man would have fired Adam Peters for suggesting
that. Real man. Okay. A real man. Because here's the beacon of a real man.
You cannot
man.
Be. Yeah. The owner of the Commanders and the owner of the Sixers. It's not okay.
Okay. All right. Why not?
You can't. Boo you.
Stan Kroenke is the owner of the Rams, and he is the owner of the Nuggets, right? I mean, I don't know. We don't have to get into the machinations of it. We're going to talk about running backs. I'm grumpy as it is because I'm not being able to talk to Brandon Graham right now at the Eagles facility.
You don't talk
I understand.
The
I am
Friday.
A. I am a. As I said today, I'm a talk show host in addition to a beat reporter. Now I can't just view it purely in terms of being a beat reporter. But yeah, it pains me that Brandon Graham's going to walk into that auditorium. He's going to look to his right and he's going to see a seat that's not filled by me and. Still come to grips with it.
Do you want
to
go?
No, this is my job. This is my job.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't be two places at once. Know that well.
Good advice for Josh Harris.
Yes, that's true. That's why he hasn't been as many Sixers games this year. All right. Well, also, I think he's living down in Florida as well. But
okay. Yeah. Nice. Good local guy.
All right, running backs.
Tough to look at. All right.
Tough to look at. You are so anti Josh Harris. Like, did he poison your soup? Like, what's the?
Yeah, he poisoned my soup.
Do you know that expression? There was this line I heard growing up when Winston Churchill was at a party.
You were there with Winston Churchill at a party?
No, I heard.
When you were growing up?
No, I heard about this line, and someone says to him, "You know, Sir Winston, if you were my husband, I'd poison your soup." And he said, "And if you were my wife, I'd drink it."
I always thought that was dinner table conversation for 5-year-old Zach.
It was like I heard these different Winston Churchill lines, and that was
were they like blaring on the speakers in your house? What do you mean you heard them?
I was talking to my grandfather about it, stuff like that. Okay. Like, yeah, we just like different wits and witticisms from over the years.
Okay.
Yeah. Running backs. I did prep work on running backs. We're talking 10 minutes.
So did I. When you were watching Jalen Hurts, I was watching Rasheen Ali.
Okay, Marshall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right, let's talk running back, Zach. First, the state of the roster.
Yes.
This guy, Saquon Barkley, is in town, mm-hmm. presumably to take the lion's share of the touches, but Kenny Gainwell's still here. Mm-hmm. Your boy, Tyrion Davis Price. Yeah. You have a future ticket on to make the Pro Bowl. Do you think the Eagles are running back curious here on day three, most likely?
Well, it is a spot that they have to fill, right, in terms of like the back end of it. Interestingly, when you talk about day three, I was going through Howie Roseman's draft history of running backs, and it's actually more like rounds 2 and 4. Bryce Brown was the only 7th round running back that they took, and that was a lottery ticket type pick.
Sure. Gainwell was a 5.
Yeah, Gainwell was okay. Gainwell and Smallwell were 5. So 6 and 7. So when you get to that territory, I think they just rather like undrafted guys. There's not a big delta between the undrafted guy and the guy that they would draft.
Sure.
But I certainly think, yeah, round 5, it is feasible. You want cheap death. Gainwell's going to be a free agent next season or after this season. You're thinking 2 years for Barkley. And that second running back could come in this year's class. I don't think it's one where they need to leave the class with it. I do think there's some intriguing options there. It's really depending on how that board falls.
How do you feel about the, let's start, I guess, with the top of the class, Jonathan Brooks from Texas, and then a quartet of 3rd round guys, according to Dane Brugler, Blake Corum from Michigan, Trey Benson from Florida State, Jalen Wright from Tennessee, and Marshawn Lloyd from Southern Cal.
Yeah, I like Brooks. Now played in a great offense, right? Took over her for Bijan Robinson, but you can certainly see it there.
A little Miles Sanders connectivity there, the guy who replaced the guy.
Yeah, I like that. Good job there.
Thanks.
He's also young. Another thing, so we talk about positions where the Eagles draft older guys. Running backs position where the Eagles historically draft younger guys. The only guy over 22 who they took was Donnell Pumphrey. That did not work out.
And for good reason, Zach, you stack up all the positions. Mm-hmm. The average rookie age running back is the youngest, exactly 22, mm-hmm. Which makes sense. You just think about the, like, this is a position where talent can shine easier in college, like quicker. There's more incentive to come out because you don't want to waste the miles. Now, there is some argument that, like, recently running backs can make a case for staying to get NIL money because they don't get paid very much in the NFL. But even if that is true, it hasn't happened yet. That said, this is a very old running back class. Mm-hmm. Dane Brugler has 5 guys on this list who are draftable who are going to be 25 as rookies.
Yeah, that's
no
not good.
Thanks. Feels like this country is going downhill. But you look at the 37 running backs in my sample of first time or initial Pro Bowlers or first team All Stars, only 2 of them have even been 24 as rookies, and that's David Johnson, who had a reason to do so because he was playing at a small school, and Philip Lindsay, who also had a reason to do so because he was playing at a small school. So a big college guy entering the league that old is a bit of a minor red flag.
Yeah, that's really good perspective there. I was going to frame that Blake Corum and Marshawn Lloyd, both older guys. Marshawn Lloyd, relatively local from Delaware.
For a pre-draft 30 visit with the Eagles.
Yeah, I wonder, though, if it's a pre-draft 30 or if it's like a local visit. Yeah, right. I don't have the answer there, but he is an older guy. But he's a good pass catching back.
He'll be 23, Corum will be 24.
Of the players you mentioned there in that 3rd round grade from Dane Brugler, Jalen Wright is the one that I like. Now, I've seen some PFF stuff recently on like the amount of open back or open running lanes that he had, like yards before contact.
Yeah, Josh Norris tweeted something last night too. Like basically the way he was using the offense, there was not a lot to it.
Yeah, but he is electric, right? And the timing bears that out. I think he's an electric back. That's someone Dane Brugler spoke about. The player that I've been talking about throughout this whole draft process is Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. I remember where I was the first time I watched Braylon Allen play. I was in at a burrito place in Denver, and this was the 2021 Eagles season, and they had the Wisconsin game on, and there's this real big running back, like a true freshman, and I saw him take a kick. I'm like, oh my goodness, like this guy's a stud. And then I've watched him a number of times, and yeah, he's
what kind of burrito did you get?
A chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. Chicken. Yeah, that's usually my. I'm not a big like beef or pork burrito person. I like steak to eat it, but not inside my burrito. Just chicken burrito. What about you?
What? Well, I wasn't there.
No, I'm saying when you get a burrito.
I mix it up. I like to mix it up.
Okay.
I'm down for like, an al pastor. Yeah.
You like carnitas? Is that the?
That could be on the table. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't even mind a vegetarian. Give me a portobello.
Ah, okay.
Burrito from Trace Jalapenos on 8th and Christian.
I like Trace Jalapenos. That used to be a COVID go-to for me.
That's where you went to get COVID?
No. I ordered in a lot during COVID, and that was one of the places that I ordered in from.
Okay. What else you put on your chicken burrito?
The worst.
Was this place Chipotle? Is that?
No. It was, what's the popular place in Denver? There's like a real popular burrito place.
I don't know.
All right. I will go. If our DMVR, we're going to speak to some of our DMVR crew later. Best burrito, Denver. It's like a famous chain there that's really good. Illegal Pete's. Yeah, that's what it was. It was the one right by the Colorado Rockies Stadium. Took a walk, ate at Illegal Pete's, had the game in front of me, watched Braylon Allen, and I was like,
dropped your burrito. You were so smitten.
He was awesome. He does not have testing numbers, but you're talking about someone 6'1", 235. He's the youngest player in this draft, I believe, Braylon Allen. And I think if you're looking for like a big physical running back, he's the kind of guy who jumps out to me. Yeah, that 2021 season that I mentioned. 1,268 yards, freshman All-American, 6.8 yards per carry.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, why is it that he is the sixth-ranked running back in this class? Just judging by the profile, seems like a guy who would be expected to be higher-ranked there.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Certainly ahead of Blake Corum, who is small and old.
Yeah, like probably not considered an explosive player, but you also don't have the testing numbers. I think sometimes these bigger backs get lumped in with that. I saw him have a number of big plays over his career. I really like Braylon Allen.
Mm. The tension for me between the profile and trusting my eyes. I really like the Jalen Wright profile.
Yep.
Great athlete, good numbers. One thing I always like to look at, and I'll have a piece on All-PHLY that includes this among many other things with the offensive profiles is like, the running back's yards per carry, and then you separate out all of the other running backs on the team and like who has a big delta there. Jalen Wright stacks up well there. But I do sort of see that, like, I don't know that there's a ton to his game. Mm-hmm. Like, he's super explosive in the open field, but I don't see him making a lot of guys miss. And I do think that, like, LeSean McCoy has sort of like poisoned my soup, if you will. When it comes to looking at running backs, because that's what I want. I want a guy to, like, aesthetically, that is the coolest thing for a running back, is a guy who is going to just make guys miss in the open field in interesting ways. I do not see that with Jalen Wright. The guy who I do see that with, who made me, who I really enjoyed watching more and had the most of that make you miss ability, is Marshawn Lloyd from USC. I really liked that. But he's an older prospect who has never run for 1,000 yards in a season. And so they're like, on paper, I like Jalen Wright a lot more. My eyes tell me I like Marshawn Lloyd a lot more.
Okay. I can see that. Did you get to watch Will Shipley at all from Clemson?
Yeah, I was a little bit unmoved.
Okay.
You like Will Shipley?
Will Shipley, former top recruit, right? He was a five-star guy. I mean, if you followed, Clemson's one of the big programs in college football, especially in 2021 when he was coming in. He was a big deal. He was kind of used all around the formation there. Good receiver out of the backfield. I was a little disappointed in the year that he had last year. I thought going into the year he was going to be a bigger type of prospect, but I did like him when he was at Clemson, and I think if you're looking for a rotational back, like, and especially someone who can catch the ball, he's certainly shown that he can do that.
For what it's worth, the only of the top 16 running backs here who did not outpace his teammates in yards per carry over the course of his college career, Will Shipley.
We got to give a shout out to Vince's guy, Isaac Arendo.
Isaac Arendo, a great athlete at 6'2", 221, 4.33 40-yard dash, 41.5-inch vertical leap. Great explosive numbers. That's nice for the profile. I do wonder, as a guy who's going to be 24 years old, why it is that, you know, he wasn't able to break out at Wisconsin. You know, I mean, Braylon Allen was there, but he didn't really make much happen, and it took a while for him to make something happen.
Yeah, I've heard some people who do like these mock drafts and kind of study the day three guys really like Dylan Laub from New Hampshire.
So I'm at the Senior Bowl.
He's like 24 years old.
And the hairline of a much older man.
Yeah, not really sold on a running back that old, but
I do have my guy though.
Chase McClellan.
Who?
Chase McClellan.
No.
Okay.
Chase McClellan.
Jace McClellan from Alabama.
No.
Okay.
That's your guy?
I thought for late in the draft. Yeah.
Okay. He's not a sixth round guy, but my guy who I do like a lot and I would be interested in maybe the fourth round as a compliment to Saquon Barkley, that is Audric Estime from Notre Dame.
Oh, I like
him.
Did not run well, but
did not run well. 4.61. But that is not necessarily that bad at running back.
It's not predictive. Yeah.
It's not predictive at running back. 5'11", 222. So he's a big honking boy. Outpaced his teammates by 1.3 yards per carry, which is the second best in the class and the best among the actual running backs because Tyrone Tracy from Purdue is the other guy. And I really like the way he runs. Gets extra yards, has a little bit of make you miss for a big fella. Big old hands, which I think a coach would like that for ball security reasons. Only had one fumble last year. Audric Estime is my guy of the day three running backs.
I can definitely see that. I liked him too. I liked him before the 40 time, but I shouldn't put too much on the 40 time when you watch him play. 4.7, 140, which is not fast, of course, but
I have 4.61 here.
4.61 was the pro day, 4.71 was the combine.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
4.61's fine by me.
4.71's the standardized thing. I mean, the pro day is like the most, I mean, yeah.
I'll take 4.61. That's fine.
When he was running on the same track as everybody else, he ran a 4.71.
When he's listed in Dane Brugler's guide, he's 4.61. That's good enough for me.
Ah, right here, combine, 4.71.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Look at the whole chart, 4.61.
Okay.
Now, also, to be fair, the 10-yard split, even for the 40 time, is not as bad. And so there's explosiveness there. He tested well in the other things, too. And so it's like it's the long speed, which, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I am with you on Audric Estime. I liked him coming out, or I liked him at Notre Dame, and think he's going to be better than what the – if the draft was in January, if you just went based on what they did in college, I would probably like him a lot more, so I shouldn't let the combine overinflate that. One last running back question. We talked about the burden of replacing an Eagles legend. Do you think that factors into their Frank Gore Jr. evaluation?
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Frank Gore Jr. from Southern Miss. I do not believe it does. Okay. Do you?
No, I do not either.
Okay. Yeah. Good stuff. All right.
This was fun. Sorry.
Loaded show today.
Yeah, sorry we did not give you the running back talk that you might have wanted.
I feel like
wanted.
We got through that.
But I can also tell you, and we'll get into it more, we're on for like 15, 16 hours yeah. on draft weekend.
I mean, let's just talk about that for a second. Yeah, we are going to be live here in Studio B on Thursday night for the draft, from the start of the draft to the end of the first round. The whole shebang. Friday night, the whole second round, and then we'll see if the Eagles have a third round pick or not. But if they do, the whole shebang there. And Saturday, we're going to be live for God knows how long.
Yeah.
From the fourth round, probably through the end of like the sixth, something like that. So
if you're like, I want a more Bucky Irving talk, then trust me, when Bucky Irving's
got some shake to him, yeah, but man, when, is he tiny.
When Bucky, well, tiny's relative, but when Bucky Irving gets drafted.
For a human NFL running back.
For a human NFL running back. Bucky Irving, when he gets drafted, we'll give you your 5 minutes on Bucky Irving.
Dylan Johnson, you like a Dylan Johnson?
I mean, I like the whole UW offense. Like Coach Flynn and I have that in common. We were infatuated by what we saw up in the Pacific Northwest.
And is it Rasheen Ali or is it Ali Rasheen?
It is Rasheen Ali, right. Yeah, but it's not Rasheen All.
No, that's right. That's good. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the PHLY Eagles podcast. We will be back, what do you know, tomorrow at noon. And then Friday, actually 1 o'clock on Friday, because we're going to be talking to our friend, the Danishman himself, Dan Brugler. So that'll do it for this episode of the PHLY Eagles podcast. For Zach, welcome back, Julia, new aunt. Very exciting. We will talk to you tomorrow. Everybody give Julia congratulations in the chat, please. Hold. Hold. Let's see it. I need to see it. I need to see it streaming up. Okay. Congratulations, Julia, people. They thought I was closing the show and they already closed the window. Is that the problem? Unbelievable. Wow. I'm going to stay here until I see it on the chat. Welcome back, Julia. This is making Zach profoundly uncomfortable.
I want to move my car because they might be towing some stuff in our lot. So I just want to make sure that my car's not towed. So.
Oh, there's a bunch now.
I want to hold on for even longer because that would be good content.
That would not be.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the PHLY Eagles podcast. Thank you, everybody. We will talk to you tomorrow. And as always, we love you. Y'all silly like the mayor.